Hello and welcome to Introduction to Meteorology at the University of Hawaii at Manoa with Dr. Jennifer Griswold. Thank you for joining us. In today's lecture, we're going to talk about mid-latitude cyclones, their formation, and typical locations for formation, as well as how cyclonic flow is related to anticyclonic flow and convergence and divergence at both the surface and aloft. In preparation for today's lecture, you should have read through the second half of Chapter 8 from Aaron's text. Last lecture, we talked about air masses, air mass source regions, polar front theory, and the different types of fronts we can experience. Today, we're going to talk about how all that relates to the formation and maintenance of mid-latitude cyclones in the Northern Hemisphere. Mid-latitude cyclones are found in the mid-latitudes, approximately between South Florida and Alaska, where the westerlies are present. They are the primary weather producers for the continental U.S. They are also called low-pressure systems, or lows, and have diameters exceeding 1,000 kilometers. They typically travel from west to east and can last a few days to more than a week. They rotate counterclockwise with flow traveling inward towards the centers. They are associated with both a warm and cold front and have surface convergence in the center. Precipitation is typically observed with both the warm and cold frontal regions of the storms. Mid-latitude cyclones generally form along stationary fronts and go through a pretty consistent life cycle over the multi-day to week timescale. The typical stages include cyclogenesis, mature stage, and occlusion. During cyclogenesis, the cyclone actually forms and the development of a low-pressure system is observed along the polar front. During the mature stage, both a warm and cold front are present along with precipitation. The pressure in the center decreases during this time, increasing the intensity of the storm. The occluded stage occurs when all the warm air is lifted over the cold or cool air and the pressure in the center stops decreasing. We can break up these three main concepts into smaller stages. First, a stationary front develops where cold polar air, or CP air, is moving parallel with warm maritime tropical air or less dense maritime polar air. Second, a wave develops in the stationary front. Under suitable conditions, the wave or kink will develop due to interactions between air, topography, temperature contrast, or ocean currents. Third, cyclonic circulation is established. Cyclonic circulation causes warm air to move poleward and cold air to move equatorward. This causes the isobars to look nearly circular with a low pressure in the center and the flow being counterclockwise in rotation. Fourth, occlusion begins. When the cold front travels faster than the warm front and lifts the warm air, we have occlusion occurring. This causes the formation of an occluded front which grows longer as more of the warm front is overtaken by the faster cold front. Fifth, the occluded front becomes fully developed. As occlusion continues, the storm intensifies, pressure in the center gets lower, and the wind speeds increase. Sixth and finally, the cyclone dissipates. As the front is forced aloft and all the warm air has been forced on top of the cold air, the pressure gradient weakens and the temperature differences decrease, ultimately weakening the storm until the point that it dissipates. Those six steps give a great summary for the standard life cycle of a mid-latitude cyclone. Let's talk a little bit more about how these storms travel across the U.S. The westerlies move the cyclones from west to east as they rotate counterclockwise. Thus, the first signs of a cyclone are usually seen in the western skies. In the Mississippi Valley, due to the jet stream, they typically start to move northeast or in a northerly direction and usually take 2 to 4 days to pass over a region. Depending on where you are in relation to the cyclone, you will experience different weather patterns and clouds. If you traveled from east to west near the center of the low, you would likely experience a newly formed occluded front, or the center of the low where some precipitation may be happening. The clouds you would experience would typically be cirrus, cirrostratus, nimbostratus, and altostratus, since you'd experience part of the warm front weather and then occluded weather. If you traveled from east to west on the outskirts of the storm near the warm and cold fronts, you'd likely first experience the warm front weather and then the cold front weather. You'd also experience a wind shift from east to southwest as you cross the warm front, and then a southwest to northwest shift as you travel across the cold front. The cloud transitions that you would experience in this case are cirrus, cirrostratus, altostratus, and nimbostratus as you approach the warm front, then clear skies and cumulus clouds in the warm sector, and then cumulonimbus clouds as you pass the cold front. After passing the cold front, you'd experience clear skies with few clouds. If we look at mid-latitude cyclones with satellites in space, they typically are found in the shape of a comma, rotating counterclockwise. Cyclones experience counterclockwise spiraling in rotation with surface convergence. Anticyclones rotate clockwise and spiral outward with surface divergence. We need surface convergence and divergence, as well as divergence and convergence aloft to maintain our storms. Air needs to come from somewhere and has to go somewhere. In order for surface convergence to last, it has to be offset by divergence aloft. You may be asking, why does upper air flow remain geostrophic and flow west to east without rotation? Well, there are several reasons. One is speed divergence and the other is directional divergence. The fast upper air, like the jet stream, allows for a zone of high wind to stretch out the air as it rises from the surface and causes upper air divergence above low pressure centers. If there is a region of slower wind, the air piles up and causes convergence, ultimately leading to surface high pressure. Directional divergence allows for the horizontal spreading of the air as it rises to the level of the jet stream. The fast-moving geostrophic air reduces the rotation of the air as it joins the jet stream. The amount of rotation the air has is referred to as vorticity. This fast geostrophic air is zonal and flows from west to east, helping to feed the anticyclones and cyclones at the surface. Cyclones have preferred formation locations with respect to the jet stream. Cyclones typically form east of an upper level trough, and as long as divergence is greater than convergence, the low will intensify, as will the storminess. Anticyclones tend to form downstream of a ridge. The accumulation of air in this region of the jet stream leads to sinking air and the development of a high pressure system. There are also preferred geographic locations for cyclogenesis. Many cyclones, in different phases of their evolution, are observed along the polar front. Cyclogenesis over the U.S. tends to occur near the eastern slope of the Rockies, the Great Basin area, the Gulf of Mexico, the Atlantic coast east of the Carolinas, and the Gulf of Alaska. These cyclones have special names based on where they are born and have special characteristics based on how cold or how warm the air mass typically is associated with these storms. First, we have the Alberta Clipper, which forms over Canada and swoops quickly down into the northern U.S. and then back up to Canada, bringing wintry weather to the northern parts of North America. Then we have the Panhandle Hook, which starts in the Panhandle of Oklahoma and curves or hooks sharply to the north Great Lakes region, bringing rain. We also have nor'easters that typically form along the Gulf Coast and travel north along the eastern seaboard, bringing snow and rain. Finally, we have the Pacific or winter storms that form over the Pacific, usually near the Gulf of Alaska, that bring winter weather to Washington, Oregon, and California. Last but not least, we can talk about the influence of anticyclones or highs. Under certain conditions, highs which usually produce clear weather due to subsidence can cause unexpected weather conditions. These special types of highs are known as blocking highs. They can be associated with bad weather and remain over a region for 2 to 4 weeks. They change the normal west to east flow and cause storms to repeatedly travel to the same locations around the high and can trap pollution in their center since air isn't allowed to leave the high and travel east. That finishes up our lecture on mid-latitude cyclones. Thanks for listening, and I hope you'll join us again for our next podcast. Goodbye!